what makes a guy like very intimidating on the outside, very violent, very aggressive, like accept a role like a servant or like a maid for in another area? And there was just at that point I started reflecting on, okay, what determines behavior, what social settings, what area, what defines who we are some people as a person, and why do we react like we do?
Hi, this is The Driven Lab, hosted by
Chiara,
Giampiero,
and Christina.
Driven stands for Danish Center for Motivation and Behavior Science. The center is based at the University of Southern Denmark in Odense, Denmark, and represents a multidisciplinary effort, the first in the Scandinavian context. We deliver cutting-edge research, education, and consultancy on factors that support sustained behavior change in various contexts, such as health, education, environment, and workplace.
Hi, so today our hosts are us, Giampiero and Christina, and we're here with Thomas Bredahl. Thomas is an associate professor at the University of Southern Denmark in the group of Active Living, and Thomas is also a member of Driven, the Danish Center for Motivation and Behavior Science. So how are you?
I'm fine, thank you, and thank you for having me.
Yeah, thanks for coming. We appreciate your time and you being here. So we talk, as you know, about like behavioral science and motivation. So how did you get started in the behavioral science?
Really, in the beginning, just like a coincidence. I was applied as a teaching assistant and interested in the health psychological parts. And then I had a supervisor saying, okay, this project could be for you. And then I got involved in the project of exercise of prescription. And then, invited into doing analysis. And suddenly it was about behavior change and motivation. And then, I did my PhD in that topic, and that was the real the scientific way into the area. But my interest in behavior science and understanding behavior and behavioral processes started much earlier. Like when I was a master student, or maybe earlier bachelor student, I had a job in the Danish prisons, being a sports director or an instructor for inmates. And one summer I was teaching in the prison in Nyborg. I had the biker gang of the Bandidos, and was teaching them to doing activities with them. And at one point I was happening. We were playing volleyball outside, and at one point a huge guy smashed the volleyball into like a bench set where the guys in very high in the grades of the gang were sitting and having maybe some juice, and all the juice spilled, and I was just watching. And at one point one guy stood up, like huge muscular, tattooed all over, and he started just to cleaning the table and pouring juice to all others, and they just kept seated and then I thought, okay, what makes a guy like very intimidating on the outside, very violent, very aggressive, like accept a role like a servant or like a maid for in another area? And there was just at that point I started reflecting on, okay, what determines behavior, what social settings, what area, what defines who we are some people as a person, and why do we react like we do? So that's why where my interest really started, in the real environment, working in extreme area, like in the prisons in Denmark.
Hmm. And what has motivated you then to stay in academia? Because I guess you, after your PhD, you could have done something else. So
yeah, I could, but my research was within behavioral psychology and motivation, and I never find like I'm finished doing the job. Always new angles, and every time I dig deeper, more interesting and relevant parts appear. And we don't seem to find the right solution. It seems always when I do my research and the analysis, I get a bit wiser on the topic, but still recognize that we need to know much more, and it's very individualized. And Yeah, so it's a challenging and very, like, you know, motivating area to understand what drives people towards physical activity and a movement in their everyday life.
And how has that evolved over time? Because so it started with this watching this interaction of these different roles, so in, I guess, like psychological roles really in a group. And so how has your interest evolved? Has it shifted into different areas or just expanded maybe?
Yeah, like I started off, it was maybe like a coincidence, like becoming a part of this exercise on prescription, doing analysis on which factors influence life, people with lifestyle diseases or on risk of lifestyle diseases, their choices towards more physical activity. And I went into areas that I found very interesting. And then I just kept on like trying to explore these areas more. And then projects evolved, like not only in middle-aged people. I did research in children and physical activity in schools, for example. And I also did a project on youth people, just like in the age of 18, 19, stopping their high school education and wanting to become like soldiers in the Danish army, and how they had to change their behavior towards a more physical active lifestyle to achieve that goal. But also like ordinary people and trying to understand what in what generates motivation for physical activity just in your lived lives, not because you're ill, not because you're sick, not because you have to, but which factors determine how you choose to live your life. I think that's very, very interesting. And yeah, I did a lot of different projects and the area kept evolving, actually.
So with all the project that you have done in this intersection between physical activity and behavioral science, what are those that you reckon are the most pivotal in your career so far? I hope many other will come in the future.
I think the most important experience is that, or result or acknowledgement, is that we need to be very, very careful to ensure that our children and youth have very good and motivating experiences with physical activity. And from the research that I have done and also have read, we are not careful enough on how we offer and how we deliver physical activity for young people. Because the Danish school system, of course, even though they focus on physical activity, they are not really reflective enough on how to make sure that all the children are motivated, have great experiences, enjoy physical activity. Looking into the research done recently by one of my PhD students, Birgitte Dalgas, she saw that even though you become 60 years of age and you have to tell your lifetime story of physical activity, they pinpoint experiences in their early childhood within schools, within kindergarten, as, like you said, pivotal action areas where they actually they had very bad experience. They were bullied. They were
So it's interesting because like every behavior that we have in our adult life, to some extent, can be attributed to the childhood that we had in many contexts. And I agree with you that the school is an extremely important context in which most of the behavior, probably the second most important after family, in which behavior can be changed. And why it is so hard to provide meaningful physical activity within school?
I think it's very hard because, of course, the schools have a curriculum. They need to follow specific rules and legislations. And of course, they have to do that. And the room for experimental things is not that big. And also, we know also for research and that the school teachers are not equipped, even though they are able to arrange physical activity and they are, and also the education. Many teachers are not equipped to see the really important things in motivating all kinds of pupils in the school. They are working to generate a better foundation, but seen in schools also that not all teachers who teach physical education are educated. Mm-hmm. They are just you know, having the course, but without personal experiences or maybe the didactics to organize it in a good way. And that's a challenge.
Yeah. My PhD was on teachers' attitude toward physical education for children with disabilities and special needs, and teachers voice that they don't have the experience, sometimes the knowledge, to provide meaningful activity, and they need more in terms of what you said, the resources that they can have in order to provide like meaningful activities for children. So interesting, very, very.
I'm interested also to hear, because I had the same experience when I was in school. I didn't enjoy like PE sessions in school, and I went on to become a professional athlete. So obviously I enjoy physical activity. But what would be the things, if you had, you could just change things, what would you change? So how would you make it more motivating for everyone?
That's, of course, a big question.
Yeah.
And depending on which...
And a lot of power to you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But depending on which, for example, theoretical framework you choose to explore, you can focus on autonomy and competence and relatedness to generate great social environments and maybe a mastery environment instead of like we have to compete all the time. Mm. But it all depends on which pupils you have. Mm. And what their experience, you mentioned family earlier, and of course that's maybe the core unit. Mm-hmm. And they are, from the birth of their child, offers inspiration for physical activity and movement to some extent. And we also know that if children do not see movement, experience movement, and move together with their parents, of course they do not learn to enjoy movement and find it natural to do so. So when they enter the public schools, of course, it takes a lot for the teachers to generate a kind of a teaching environment that encompasses all different kinds of experiences of physical activity. And that's a great challenge, but a necessary challenge. And maybe I think the idea would be to offer much more resources on that area.
I agree. And it's a huge part of someone's life, physical activity. So it has to start at the school level, or if the family is not providing that, it has to start somewhere. It's a sort of education that has to happen somewhere. Mm-hmm. And if the family is not able to provide that, then the school should provide that. But moving a little bit on, when pupils leave the school, so what are the other forms of physical activity that people can be, of course, we have like leisure time, we have sports, we know all these things. But I think that I'm tending toward one of the articles that you that you have published about the commuting. Like I'm from Italy, I lived in Dublin, in Ireland, and now I'm living in Denmark. And I see a lot of differences in the way in which people move every day, and I basically cycle 15 kilometers every day because I go to the university, then go to the gym, then go back home, and that's physical. That's part of physical activity. That's part of being active. And people sometimes, you know, don't consider that. So, in terms of like behavioral, the behavioral component in physical activity after someone leaves schools, without taking into account like the sport of the activity that you do because you want to do, what do you think is happening? What do you think people should change, or how can they change?
Thank you.
If they can.
I try to maybe narrow it down a bit. For, of course, we have these, like in literature, these four domains of physical activity or movement, like, you know, the transportation domain, the household domain, the recreational domain, and the occupational domain. And we have different opportunities depending on which area we choose to talk about. And let's maybe dig into the transportation part, the commuting part. Mm. whether you choose to transport yourself actively, it depends on many things, like accessibility, safety, culture. If you choose, for example, say you're living here in Denmark, in Odense, we have bike paths all over, and everybody does use their bicycle because it's all flat, and the city is organized so that we welcome cyclists. But if you just go to other cities in the world, like, for example, Rome or any other part in Italy, you never see a bike path, and then it becomes rather dangerous, and the cars, they do not expect people to come on their bikes. So all this generates a very dangerous environment for becoming, for example, physical activity using your bike. So if you want to change that, you have to make it a part of the city planning. And that is challenging, because if you want to do it now, you can, of course, do it in newly built environments. When you build it, you can consider that. But in cities where the streets are narrow and you already have this done this design, it's very difficult to enhance, for example, room for bikes and maybe safe pedestrian access and so on.
Mm. And do you think this would work? Like, do you think it's an bicycle lanes just to encourage people to cycle? Or there should be other forms of strategy to, like, change behavior in people?
Yeah. Because there might also be, my goal is to start cycling to work. I'm not doing it yet, so maybe you'll see me one day. But obviously we're in an environment where there's lots of opportunity. So it's not the environment, I guess, stopping me from doing it. So are there, like, some personal factors that you would also...
Of course, of course. If you are... if you have never traveled by bike, I don't think comfortable using your bike, of course you will prefer other ways of transport. And if you're not physically active, that would not be your first choice. So just to answer your question, I think that not only providing opportunities, but also maybe rules and politics to enhance movement to return to maybe the commuting experience. We had... like a bus company offering free transportation for people who wanted to try traveling instead of car, and we tried different strategies to motivate them during this process. That we could see that, well, it wasn't not really efficient, any of the strategies that we applied, like a gamification perspective, a nudge perspective, and a health perspective. That was not enough, and the article also discusses, like, we need to do more. It needs to be like easy. It needs to be accessible. It needs to be flexible. It needs to be like just as easy and convenient as using your car. And maybe to answer your question, you can do something like increase payment for cars in cities and making it the use of car difficult or expensive. But then you have to increase, like, the possibility to use the public transport. And right now, in our city at least, the possibilities are decreasing.
Mm. Okay.
It's becoming more expensive, and they are removing different bus routes due to a less amount of customers. So it's kind of right here is going in another direction.
Yeah, I think... there are several strategies probably that can be implemented. I remember in Ireland, in one of the universities, they have like the bike to work scheme, in which you can to encourage people to cycling. They let you pay in installments your bike through the company, so you can get. And then they also in a couple of institutions, they also open the restrooms to people to take the shower before going to work if they were cycling. So I don't know if that is working. Probably there are some challenges in terms of, like, you mentioned cultural, maybe weather also could be, although here Denmark is not that pleasant in that regard, but it's something that that. But it's interesting that you mentioned that despite the fact that you were providing different strategies to people, you didn't see like people engaging more in taking the buses rather than the car, probably like because the convenience, because the ease in which people and the freedom of using the car instead of using other form of transportations.
The flexibility, for example, like when you have to go to work, you need to be able to leave your home at a certain time point and be sure to arrive at your working time. But with delays and congestion, maybe in traffic, by buses and you having to stop, that's a barrier. We'll have to go home from work. Like it leaves no flexibility. You have to leave at, for example, at 3 o'clock or 3:30 or 4, to be sure to catch the bus at the right time. And if the bus is delayed, you will be late arriving at home. And that flexibility generates a barrier. For example, for people with family and having to pick kids up for kindergarten, that is not really attractive. So you need to figure out a more like efficient system where you can rely on timetables and delivery of transportation.
So you said this piece of research that you did, and we'll put the link for that also in the show notes. You used the different techniques like nudging, gamification, and I think health
prompts. Yeah.
But you said that was not effective in itself. So
no,
would you have done it differently if you had to redo that?
I don't know. Like the project was like a quasi-experimental design, and we were working together with a behavioral design company, experimental. So we did some analysis, but it was not like a randomized control trial. So we cannot really rely 100% on the results, but it gives some information, and the gamification parts were like receiving a special coins, receiving a diploma, like for doing different things and having many stops and many uses of the bus. And the nudging part were like, okay, please come on, we'll send you a calendar, remember to use the bus, and we'll see you, great job, and so on. And the health benefits were like, okay, if you get off one stop earlier and walk from home, you will gain these health benefits, and so on. We tried to generate different kind of prompts for our motivational aspects, and we can see that the most efficient part was kind of the gamification part and also maybe the nudging part. Not a very great difference, but looking into the statistics, it was a bit more efficient, like to have this kind of game performance element in your transportation. But even though we offered the for a full month, they could travel free for a full month. I think they only used it in average like 14 times, like traveling back and forth 7 times during a month. So it was not really that much. So the experiment was not a success seen from the company.
So I just want a clarification for those like me who are not sure about what nudging is.
There are some differences in definitions of nudging, and depending on which definition you use, it's kind of like a an invisible prompt to make people take up a specific behavior, like for example using the stairs instead of an escalator or something like that. You will get invisible signs to or you remove the elevator, like you haven't to walk 100 meters to get the elevator or the escalator, and there's only a stair. That would be a physical activity notch.
Okay.
You can also, I have seen for collecting of garbage, seen interesting like waste baskets. So that would be fun to throw your garbage in, like a notch. This is fun, like competitive. You can do that.
And so would that almost be into like, would that be gamification if you made it into some kind of like throwing like a game?
Yeah, it could be. If it, for example, overlap? Would offer you gamification feedback. You will get points, for example, if you were hitting in the middle, and you will get like a reward or something. Yeah. That could be kind of a gamification. But the other part would be like, this is interesting or relevant for me to do, so I will just do it instead of reflecting upon which choices do I have, or doing what you usually do, like the automatic behavior using the escalator.
So could we always say, it's almost say it's like directing people's behavior in the right direction.
Being invisible in that way.
What is your opinion about nudging, then? Does it work?
Yeah, I think it does.
Okay.
In some way, of course, it works. If you do, depending on how strict you do it, if you only offer a staircase, of course, people will use the staircase to get to the trains, for example, here in Odense.
Yeah.
And if those choices, for example, are easy or the only choices, it works. But if you have to decide and reflect, and the signs are not that obvious, well, then it doesn't work. So you have to design it in a very intelligent way to make sure that it works to some extent at least. But I think the most, and we know that for research, things that work is like if you change rules and laws and do the structural reframing of things. So you're not able to choose like unhealthy behavior and unhealthy food and something like that.
Yeah, because I remember like, and it was... I was listening to a radio program at some point, and they were talking about the law about not smoking inside buildings. That was really effective. And they were talking about the Italian environment, of course, and they say, yeah, just this law was in place, and then people stopped doing that because they didn't have choice. And if they were to smoke inside, they would have been fined. Is that effective? Like, because sometimes you can understand it. Smoking has a bad, is bad for your health, but we know that physical inactivity is bad for your health. But can you implement a law to ask people to be physically active in some way? That is like a line,
exactly,
a thin line.
I like your laugh because it's kind of it's also a question of ethics.
Yeah.
Because how can you do a law on physical activity, and how do you decide what is the right thing to do concerning physical activity and the amount, the intensity? There's a lot of different things you need to consider, and I don't think so. But I know that, for example, in Germany, they have integrated like physical activity in the insurance system.
Okay.
So if you are kind of obese and they know you have a health condition or something like that, your health insurance, the amount you have to pay will increase a lot. Mm-hmm. And you could get a lot of discounts by documenting your physical activity and so on. So they are trying to figure out a way to like reward an active, healthy mm-hmm. behavior. But also I think that's kind of on the edge. It's a thin line where you have to discuss the ethics in that. And
because it also might be effective, but the question is, if you're doing it just for the reward, is it really because you, like, is it going to, like, create some kind of long-term behavior change because you don't actually enjoy it?
Yeah. Looking into, for example, self-determination theory, the research concerning that theory would say no.
Yeah.
You will only do it, like, for external motivation, like, because you... ought to or should, like, like the interjected motivation, but...
And could you just, like, just in few words describe, like, self-determination theory, just if someone is listening and they're like, I've never heard about this before, what are you talking about?
Yeah, it's a very well-known, extensively used motivational theory. The researchers, Dickie Ryan... developed this theory saying that we have three basic psychological needs. We need autonomy in our decision making. We need the experience of control and competence, and we need to be like have a sense of relatedness towards a specific group or activity. And if we are highly satisfied in those such psychological needs, we will be like more intrinsic motivated towards a specific behavior. But they also introduce, they call it organismic integration theory, like a continuum of different stages of motivation, saying that there's a lot of different stages of external motivation. You can, for example, do a specific behavior because you are forced to do so or you are paid to do so. You can do a behavior because you think it could be a good idea or you are expected to do so. You could do it because it relates to you as a person, and you can do it because you identify with a specific behavior. But the only way a specific behavior can become intrinsic motivating is like if you enjoy it, you feel a sense of enjoyment. Mm-hmm. And that's maybe the core of the self-determination theory. So my point is that making laws will not generate intrinsic motivation. It will generate some kind of extrinsic motivation. But then if we use the theory in a in intellectual good way, we could maybe find ways to, when the people are physical activity, actually organize it in a way that they learn or learn to enjoy it instead of just being physically active just for the activity. But there's some meaning to it as well. And that would be the great way to go about it, I think.
Yeah, which makes sense because, like, going back on the smoking example, in Italy, people don't smoke inside, but they go outside and smoke a cigarette when they're having a pint. So yeah. It didn't really work. And they are doing something similar in New Zealand. I heard that they are not allowing people above a certain age to buy cigarettes anymore or vaping and all
this
stuff.
It's a way to phase it out, I think, that people can
But yeah.
But they're doing in Denmark as well with alcohol restrictions and young people not able to buy, for example, strong alcohol before the age of 18, for example. And they have, also at 16 you are allowed to buy some kind of alcohol, but not everything. So they have some laws against. There's also cigarettes,
I guess for the behavior it's effective, but for the motivation maybe less so.
Yeah, exactly.
So if we're talking about these like activity friendly environments, like for example, I haven't lived in Denmark for many years, and when I came back, I noticed there's these like outside gyms and everything is built so that you can easily cycle. There's lots of good things in the environment. Do you see that as like a good way to increase physical activity?
To some extent it is. We have just done this a huge research project called Moving Denmark, putting out a questionnaire to 450,000 Danes and having answers back, I think 170,000 answers. And before we did that study, we did a scoping review looking into physical the built environment and the motivating factors and barriers also for using the built environment or the local environment as a inspiration for physical activity. And what we saw was like if the environment nearby your house is kind of aesthetic, attractive, and it's safe and well renovated, like people will use it. And if you have access to nearby parks and the parks are safe, I think there's safety and lighting and crime-free areas is very important, seeing that. And then people will use the park. And then typically we also know from earlier research that if you have a purpose going out on your in your local area, you will tend to do so. Use your bike or walk, but then you have to have a purpose. We can go to the park and visit the fountain. We can go to the park and visit the ice cream store. We can walk from here and go to the bakery, something like that. So to be able to reach your destination within some kilometers or for biking and then maybe a smaller distance for walking. And if that is possible, and you have a purpose for your physical activity and it's aesthetic and safe, you will do it. And that poses, of course, a challenge to many built environments because it is not so. Right now we are moving, for example, shopping outside the local living areas to larger malls, and you have to commute for longer distances. Mm-hmm. And that, of course, does not motivate people to leave their apartments or houses and travel by bike, because you have to go by car to be able to do your groceries. But we also see that the already built environments, they have not considered like the active areas in the same way as we want to do it now. And those are typically the areas where people with a lower social class are living, and there's a lot of concrete, and there's a lot of different the people live very close, not many green areas, and it doesn't really feel safe to move in these areas. And as we know from research, these population groups are those most in need of, for example, physical activity and behavior change, and the environment does not generate the possibility or at least the motivation for physical activity, because they are not safe, they are not aesthetic, they are not well renovated, and you do not get to move with a purpose like to the nearby store or something like that, a nearby physical activity center or something like that. And that generally it's a challenge because you have to put a lot of like restructuring and money and policies in redecorating, reforming these areas. So that poses a challenge, I think.
So for those populations, so or these groups, would it be making the spaces safer, more aesthetic? Would that be?
It could provide some of the resource. What we know, for example, for the elderly, we know that they value like safety. They value street lighting. They value park and benches in the area so they can rest. And of course, they need a pavement for their like rollator or something like that, so they can travel safe and rest and be able to reach their destination. That's what they value at least, to be able to move outside. And we could generate a lot of physical activity among the elderly just by providing those things. Mm. So we can do something about it.
Yeah, I think it's something about like the neighborhood organization and how you just target that particular neighborhood and make that the architecture and the shape of the neighborhood like suitable for the people who are living there, like targeting that. It's really hard to do though. Mm. Like how can you mentioned that you need to change, to reshape everything to accommodate people's need. And it's difficult, I suppose. Like
it's very difficult. We have in the active living unit, I have not been part of that research project, but I have colleagues doing research in built environment, and they have changed living areas, like the outdoor facilities in living areas in Copenhagen, where they have, for example, for area between blocks of living, they have replaced old structure with new movement possibilities, and they saw an increase in movement among children, but also people living there, because the area was attractive. You can go down there and you could bring your kids and they could, for example, play and maybe do some skateboarding. And the parents would walk along because it was a nice aesthetic area. And the children would move more often instead of just what should they do if they exit their home. There was just a gray area with some trees and maybe some grass. But then the new area generated movement, and there was maybe a more simple task to restructure a local area between blocks, and they saw more movement there, so we can do it, I think.
Yeah, that reminds me a neighborhood in Barcelona. Like a friend of mine lives in Barcelona, and he has a kid, and there is this park in the city center because he used to live close to the Sagrada Familia, and there is this park with like a small bar where you can go and drink something, and then there is also like a park, a playground for children. So it was like ideal to go there for a walk and then let the children play with between themselves while like having like coffee or something like that. So I think that encourages people to leave their neighbors in a better way and just to be more physical active.
Yeah.
But as you say, it requires like a lot of planning ahead and change everything.
Yeah, but it relates to the purpose part. Mm. If you leave your home to be active, you need to have these possibilities to be active, and you need to have a purpose of your physical activity, not just for running. It could be walking, like we will go to the park, we'll go to the fountain, we will go to the ice cream shop, we'll go to the playground or the skating area, and then you will have a purpose, and the purpose will be both for the kids and the youth, but also the parents. Like there's an idea for them to walk along with their kids because it will be a great, great walk. They will get to see things and it will be in a aesthetic area, and that will be motivating for going out, at least walking as a form of transportation instead of driving somewhere.
So my challenge for what my question is for you is a little bit tricky. So we know that research shows us that we can provide an inbuilt environment that promotes physical activity. So what are the barriers to translate that research into practice? Why this is not happening? If we know that if we give the people the right structures, the right environment, they tend to move more. And of course, we know that physical activity in any form is a good prevention tool for any sort of condition. So Well, where is the gap?
Why are they not doing it? Sorry. I forgot to tell them.
That's a very good question. Thank you.
Sorry, I didn't mean to put you on the spot.
I don't know how to answer. I think maybe I could give some suggestions, not being an expert. But I think, well, of course, economy. Mm-hmm. And it's very expensive to redesign and redecorate those things. And also politics, because if you have limited public resources, there will be a lot of different interests in how to spend these money. And of course, there will be a lot of political discussions on how to use money on an area that won't show you immediate effect. For example, if you introduce a more active area, you won't get like the public health benefits. You don't know, it's not measurable. And then it's not popular for politicians to decide to do that, because maybe they will know in 30, 40 years if the effect is what it was expected. And then it's not like a political good signal. So we're struggling like the ideal way and the real way. Just as any other political issue, like we have these ideals, but this is what we can do. Should we spend the money on a new playground aesthetic, or should we spend the money on our public hospitals, for example? That's a struggle. So I think it's very difficult, and with a limited amount of money, that it generates some discussions.
Yeah, and you mentioned something really important, that politicians usually want to do something in the short midterm, because you know they want to get reelected usually, so they want just to provide something that they have done, and with changes that requires times, it's not really worth probably from them to put money in that unless they have like a long-term vision. So
exactly, and luckily we have some long-term vision, but not the most of them.
I was more thinking about Italy. But yeah.
So of course we struggle, and it's a great. But I think in Denmark we do quite many things. Also, when we build new areas, we try to ensure that, well, we have pedestrian streets, we have safe roads, we have bike path, we have local sports facilities, and we do quite many things. Okay, I think. Mm.
Yeah, no, it's great.
But I think that the key is that to get people to do it, they need to find it enjoyable. They need to have very good experiences with physical activity, traveling by bike, commuting, walking. That should be something for them to enjoy. Otherwise, they will choose to do something else they find enjoyable, driving their car, using their moped or scooter or something like that, because it's easier. And it's enjoyable, and it will get them to their destination quite easy. So I think that we need to figure out how to generate an environment among families and schools and youth context that actually makes movement and physical activity enjoyable. And I think that's the main struggle that we face.
So it seems like there's lots of different levels. It's like on the creating the environment, and also creating a culture, I guess, in the family or in the school where it's enjoyable, and then also like on a very individual level is like all these different kind of.
My current PhD student Birgitte Dalgas, she did this study on life domains or physical activity domains, but she also did, I think that's very interesting, a study on life transitions, showing that research has shown different very important areas of life transitions affecting physical activity, like moving from being in school, for example. That's a very that's a important area. But also leaving school, moving, for example, to another city, doing your youth education, generating a new life, or like removing yourself from an old environment to a new environment. Then there's having kids, creating a family, then also doing some kind of work, and then retiring. There's different kinds of life transitions, and they all affect the way you move and how you move. And if the transitions are done for the individual in a good manner, they will keep up their physical activity in all kinds of these transitions. But we know from literature and also for her, from her research, that some areas, some transitions are more struggling than others, like having a family. Because, of course, you will have to tend to your children and it will take up a lot of your time, and the physical activity, it decreases. Also, moving to a new environment can be challenging, because you have to restructure, finding new opportunities for being physically active. But also, if you start working and you maybe have a demanding work, it will limit your free time. But also, like, depending on how, if you are commuting, depending on the way it's structured, it will be difficult for you to find time to be physically active if the work does not provide for that. So it's kind of a, these transitions are important. And her point in one of the her articles is that if we want to do something, we need to consider these transitions and figure out how to best possible support people in doing these transitions and holding on to the level of physical activity.
Yeah, it's interesting because there is research done on the transition into parenthood and how that affects mental health.
Yeah.
So that transition is really, really important in someone's life. You know, you can you might give up a lot of things that you were supposed to do when you have child. So it's those transitions. Oh, I love this research. Can't wait to read more about that. If we look in, if you look at your future, okay, and in the research and university, how do you think? What do you think the new trends in research will be? Trends that embrace physical activity, behavioral science, and the environment within which we live in. So what do you think will happen in the research in the future?
Well, I think it's very difficult to say. And I think a lot of different directions are put out. Of course, we need to look into a sustainability thing, but we also need to consider how to address this area of physical activity. And I think there will be a lot of focus on children, physical activity, and like how to generate the best possible foundation for becoming a lifelong physical active. I think that will be a main research area, and I think the government also will put focus on that in the future. But of course, the technological part, how we can use technology and maybe combine like physical activity, technology, and motivation to generate some kind of virtual room for physical activity. I think that will be a research area expanding in the future as well.
On this note, I remember a few years ago, I think it was 2019, I went to a conference, the International Society of Behavioral Nutrition and Physical Activity. And I remember, maybe I'm saying something wrong, but this guy, I think he was from Canada, he was conducting some research on getting data from people's phones, okay, because they, you know, of course they agreed, whatever, and see the way in which they moved every day, but in terms of, okay, what are the routes that they take to go to work, what are the spaces in which these people live the most, or just walk outdoor, and I think it was he wanted to provide information to the municipality or the government to say, look, these people mainly use this area of the city, we need to rethink this area in order to make maybe the experience more enjoyable. So that thing, that could be like something.
I think it's a really good idea, because some of the experience we did in the project Moving Denmark was also to look into the geographical indexing system to see, for example, in areas of Denmark with a lot of coastline, we have some areas where they use the coastline a lot and people are very active, like in the outdoor living and using the water. But we have also very great areas where these facilities, like forests and the sea around Denmark, it's not used for physical activity. So we have some areas with unexplored potential, where we can see these areas are used to a wide extent in some areas in Denmark, but in other areas they are not used. Maybe due to population, due to experience, due to culture, due to a lot of things, due to maybe the municipality has not been aware of the potential. So from the research we did in Moving Denmark, we can see that there are many areas in Denmark where there are potential to use those areas for more movement. Like you said, you can see that they use it very much here and they do not use it here. What's the difference? And how can we facilitate the usage of this area instead? That could also be a potential.
Yes. So many interesting areas. Are there any specific like research question or area that you think like personally for you would be interesting to explore in the future or maybe in the near future?
For me, I think the individual perspective, I think that is very interesting to understand, because every time we try to generate a generic intervention or generic physical activity, we always find that, well, it's somebody succeeds, but a lot does not. And we need to personalize interventions, taking individual perspectives into account. And that is very difficult, I know, but also very, I think, required, necessary, and extremely interesting. So I think that would be what I would be interested in looking into, but also considering how to generate as a motivating physical activity where you actually enjoy your movement and not just move because you have to or because it's beneficial for your health.
Well, that's interesting. A lot of food for thoughts again, and a lot of things going on, and it's really interesting. Really interesting, all the research that you've done and everything. Thank you for being with us today. Yes, your perspectives have been I appreciate it a lot. Yeah. So we tend to finish the episode with five quick questions. I think I might know the answer to a couple of them.
Maybe you will surprise us. Let's see.
But I am going to ask them anyway. You ready?
Yeah.
Not really easy.
I am.
Coffee or tea?
Coffee.
Cycling or driving?
Cycling, always.
You could have surprised us there.
Actually, I took the car to work this morning.
Oh,
I have to do some groceries. I cannot carry on my bike on my way.
No, fair enough. Getting up early or sleeping in?
Getting up early, always.
Training or couch potating?
Both, I think. I love training.
At the same time?
No. I love physical activity. I love the training, but I also love spending time in the couch. Yeah.
So having a good balance.
Yeah, exactly.
Last one, procrastinating or rushing to finish it?
I don't know. Sometimes both.
Depends when the deadline is.
Exactly. Yeah.
Oh, thank you so much for being here today. It was really interesting. If people want to get in contact with you or they want to read more about your research or in other ways kind of contact you, what's the best way to follow you or to get in contact with you?
I think if they look into the web page of the SDU, and they can find both my research areas, but also the projects I've done and the publications. So they can, that would be the most easy way to. We'll and also my contact details will be accessible that way.
Okay.
Yeah. We'll put the links there. And also for the nice articles and research that we talked about today, we'll put links for that as well.
Perfect.
Well, Thomas, thank you very much again for being with us.
Thank you for having me and for a great interview.
Thanks. A new episode will be released on the 1st of every month. Make sure you subscribe to The Driven Lab on your favorite platform. And once you're there, we would really appreciate if you leave us a review.
And you can also follow us on X, LinkedIn or Instagram, driven_SDU. So join us on this journey as we explore the potential of understanding and influencing human behavior for a brighter future.